Hey, Colin, Jason here. Sorry, I'm talking through a mask. As far as procedures, or just so I'm clear what you mean when you say procedures, you mean things like you always handle whether torches run out the same way, or, you know, every 2 hours you always roll for a random monster, stuff like that, like set, like SOPs and how you run the game. Just looking for clarification there. Anyhow, I just wanted to call, let you know that you haven't chased me off yet. Hopefully, you know, you're able to hold down the fort with school and family and everything else you got going on. And yeah, so hang in there and we'll talk to you soon.
I'm Colin Green and you are listening to Spike Pit. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Alright folks, I have not flatlined.
Hey there Colin, it's John here from the Red Dice Diaries. Yeah, as for people who refer to procedures as a crutch, well, I'll have some choice words for them, but I'll omit them since I know you're trying to keep your podcast a bit more sort of on the family friendly side. But suffice to say, like yourself, I do not agree. As you know, I love the sort of procedural element of old school essentials, and we use a lot of it in the Smoke and Snow campaign. And the reason I like that is because it gives you a solid foundation or a base that you can then build on. And I like to use a sort of like an analogy. I like to imagine it like a house. Yeah, you could just like build your house on the ground, but it's maybe not as stable, whereas if you like lay your foundations nice, you get all the concrete smooth and whatever, the actual house that you end up with is far stronger and is going to last for an awful lot longer and can sort of weather storms and whatever better. And that's how I see procedures in RPGs. It's a strong base from which you can then build on and you can expand with your creativity. Now, if you, as you say, you sort of stick to it too doggedly, it can be a little bit stifling. But if you just see there's a base for which to build on, I think they can be great. And they're also useful because if you find yourself sort of struggling a bit and you're not sure what to do, you've got those procedures to fall back on as sort of inspiration or to help guide your sort of like imagination. So anyway, that's just my thoughts on procedures. I'm a big fan of them. I think they're a great framework. I think they add a lot to a game and they also provide support for players' creativity. Keep up the good work, dude, and I'll catch you soon.
Procedures then. We've heard from John Large, and we've heard from Jason Connolly. And I want to talk a little bit about that. See if I can clarify things for Jason. And a bit of support, I guess, to what John's saying. Because I'm in agreement. It's this idea of structure. He mentions foundations. Another analogy might be the building blocks of the experience that you're engaging with at the table or on your computer. I'm interested in this idea of procedure. It ties in, I think, with something else that gets talked about, the idea of ritual. And there's a crossover there. There's a crossover, particularly if you think about that getting together around a table and coming up with your characters and talking about the world and what it is you want to do. That creative buzz, that energy at the start of a game has got a ritual vibe about it, I think. Especially if you've been playing for a while and you've got these fond memories. As you're sitting there, well, I find personally past experiences are kind of almost playing through my mind. I think it's your brain trying to get hold of what's going on and process what's going on and perhaps rustle up some inspiration. I guess because you're looking through your files thinking, yeah, I'd quite like to do something different. You know, what have I done before? What could I try out this time? Because there is that exploration of the new each time you sit down for a session. The other thing that I think is important about this pondering on procedure is related to design and design thinking about the user. Now you might be wondering, what am I on about design and users? And I reckon that, you know, when we're putting a game together, if it's not a GM-less game, are we thinking about the players? Are we thinking about the players? And I think probably a bit more than you sometimes realise. And it's perhaps sort of instinctive. One of the things you hear often is people saying, I don't think that'll go down well with my group, or that's not what my players are into. And that's that thinking. You're thinking about your, I'll use the word audience, which is probably not the best word. In fact, let's not bother with audience. Your group, yeah, your players. We'll just stick with that, keep it simple. Your players. So you're trying to create the environment for this experience to happen, and the much lauded concept of you want everybody to have fun, and of course you do. So you're basically setting yourself that as a brief, and then your solution is what you come up with in the game. Now you don't traditionally, a lot of this burden would rest, you know, if you're playing D&D, that would rest with the DM or the referee, or it's sort of that, is it, I think that is implied, and sometimes it is actually written, but as games have moved on, that seems to get questioned a bit more. I like to do the whole source the table thing. Interestingly, I meant to call into Joe Richter on Hindsightless, because he was he'd recently given out a book of fairy tales to his players, and then it sort of dawned on him that he'd almost made a rod for his own back, insofar as naturally one of the first things they were going to ask is, you know, what are the fairy tales, what's in the book? And he hadn't worked up the idea that far, so he was sort of like put on the spot a little bit, and then later on came out with a tale which he actually recorded. I urge you to go and have a listen. It's Papa Joe's Story Time, Story Time, I think is the name of the episode. So he's got his cool little tale in there. Myself, well, you know what, you probably know what I'm going to say. Yes, I'd have turned that around, straight round onto the players. It's my default move. So you tell me. You tell me what's in that book. It seems like a cop out, but of course, if you've got players and you know your players are happy with that sort of thing, quite often they relish it. So procedures are a handy way of providing this structure and foundation, as John quite rightly says. And the thing I was talking about was the way that Gavin Norman in his Old School Essentials has really brought that procedural play to the forefront. And if you want to contrast that with 5th edition, it's a little bit more buried, a bit more obscure. You could think of character generation as an example of procedure. You can sort of bury that procedure in loads of text and examples, or you present it as a bit of a checklist, like a table, in which case it immediately is, I think, more recognisable as a procedure. The minute you make a checklist or a flow chart, something like that, it really like focuses the attention, and you can see that procedural structure. So I'm interested in this idea of procedure, and I'm also interested in this idea of flowcharts. You see them in games, but you don't see a busting load of them. I think I would like to see more myself, because you can get quite a lot of information in there, and it's got like an easily digested form. And I think there should be more of it. I think there should. So Jason's looking for some clarification. So I'll do that with a few examples of what I'm talking about. Like he says, tracking time, the way you track time, the sort of set durations that tasks have and how they relate to time, the frequency of like rolling for wandering monsters, you know, all that type of stuff, the procedure for setting out on a wilderness journey, or in something like Adventures in Middle-earth or the One Ring, they've got these subsystems for journeying and audiences and different things like that. They're almost like, if you've got quite involved procedures, it can almost become like a mini game within the larger game. It might be a codified system of unarmed combat, so like a wrestling match. The procedures that I've talked about recently in 5th edition that I think have got some potential, that have caught my interest, is the death save. This sort of, it's basically three strikes and you're out. It's three strikes and you're out, and conditions and exhaustion in particular. Something else that's been talked about a lot recently, I know Rob from Down in the Heap has been talking and receiving call-ins about hirelings. You've got the whole process of hiring them, the loyalty, that kind of makes me think of morale for monsters, and to a certain extent it is virtually the same as loyalty. And it also crosses over into the territory of AI. As you get more procedures, I think you could start heading into the realms of the GM-less game. I've played Final Girl only one time, but really enjoyed it, and of course it's super reliant on these procedures. And the more I'm thinking the more I'm seeing that is your game, isn't it? You're going through the motions, you're taking a set of procedures, combining them into a system. It's like a machine, a set of processes that work out, play out in a certain way. That's what gives you your game. That is where the magic happens. And of course, this is nothing new. I mean, you know, it's a reframing. Reframing this idea, thinking of a game in terms of procedures rather than being made up of rules. I wonder if that's helpful, or is it just some of that over-analysis that we we love to do? Probably.
Hey Colin, it's Jules from NZ. I'm in your back catalogues in episode, like, I don't even know, 369 something or other, where you're talking about 05R, and you mentioned that you don't think that having all of the sticky stuff, the really meaty stuff about adventuring it further in or further towards the front is great design. I disagree with you, buddy. I think this is the first time we might have disagreed about 5E. I appreciate that the book gives the dungeon masters who are beginning a quick and easy overview of how to run a game without all of that sticky, gritty, meaty stuff, because it can feel really overwhelming with that much information just to start with. I actually think the beauty of the Dungeon Master's Handbook is that, or the Dungeon Master's Guide, is that as you're looking for those meatier pieces, you can go searching and find them, you know, pretty easily, actually, if you are deliberately looking for, hey, what happens if they're up in a mountain and they're adventuring up there? How does cold work? Are there blizzards? Like, do they get levels of exhaustion? Blah, blah, blah. It's all there for you in a nice little package. But it's definitely not just at the front, because 5e is not about prescripting what your adventure should look like or the steps that you should have. It's about you designing the adventure that you want to go on. And if you want to fast travel and not even have an adventure along the way, then that's completely up to you. There are no steps.
Thanks for the call in, Jules. Clearly a fan of 5th edition. She likes the DMG. Quite happy with how it's presented. As I said in the episode 369, all these opinions are subjective, of course, but this doesn't matter. Opinion is just that. It's hot air. It's the discussion that counts. So are we intimidated by having the rules for running the game front and centre? Or are you, like I was trying to say, I find myself intimidated by all this stuff about gods and building a world and the multiverse. And I think some of the things that put me off of the DMG, the current one, is I think it's something like page 237 before we're getting into running the game. And that's where you found one of my favourite parts, which was using ability scores. I think there's been some misinterpretation of how ability scores and using them, the designer's intention, has got a little bit lost in the current edition. And not surprising if you're going to bury it 237 pages into a book. Of course you can find it, but I just think maybe someone picks that book up, and we're so, a lot of people, they're so used to reading the book from the beginning to the end, cover to cover, and you've read about all these alternate dimensions, different worlds, making up a whole universe, world building, you know, how many people should live in a town, how many people live in a city. There's loads of stuff. And I'm not saying it's bad stuff, but there's just loads of it. And the problem with one of these discussions and doing a podcast, I sometimes think I'm talking about things that people haven't seen. So if I talk about Red Box Basic, DM's book, and say that presents a really nice on-ramp to learning what that classical DM experience was about back in the day, It holds you by the hand. It walks you through it. So that if you haven't got actual plays and you haven't got YouTube videos, it was a really good kind of tutorial type of book. And in some ways, D&D nowadays uses the starter set or the essentials box to kind of fulfill that role. And I don't know if people always realise that. You know, they're perhaps thinking, oh yeah, the DM's guide, that's how you find out about DMing. Yeah, but it is really a reference book. I wouldn't recommend that to a new player as a way to get into the game. I'm a firm believer in if you want to play D&D, you kind of need someone to teach you, or perhaps you do go on YouTube, or you're better off with something more manageable like the starter set, the clues in the title, or essentials. Even in the front of the book, in page one or two, it's saying this book is not designed to teach you how to play. This is not a teach you how to play product. Maybe you do want to get into that whole creative world building thing. What is an adventure and all of that stuff? What is the world? But it's heavy Forgotten Realms. Heavy Forgotten Realms. And their IP, understandably. Now, if you're a big fan of that, you're going to delve into it, really enjoy it, I guess. But podcasting, it lacks a context. Sometimes it's frustrating for me because I would like to be showing people the Redbox Basic. I would like to, when I talk about how Old School Essentials presents some procedures to you in a straightforward manner, I would like to just be able to show you these double page spreads. And nothing I was saying is suggesting that there is a way you should be doing something. I mean, I'm the last person to say that. I mean, I don't really use a DM's book. In fact, where I'm at with D&D now, there's not much D&D left in my D&D, really. Hence, the Project Spike Hack. But ultimately, you've got to make up your own mind. But I would urge anybody that is wondering what the DMG is all about, have a look at the current one. Try and have a look at some older ones. I do recommend looking at Mensa Redbox Basic, DM's book. That's a bit of an eye-opener. And then for clarity and presentation, if you like something a little bit more procedural, Gavin Norman has really laid it out super clear. This, for me, is an exercise of compare and contrast. You've got to look at them. You've got to look at them and see what I'm talking about. You may well already be quite familiar, of course.
And that, as they say, is a wrap. Big thanks goes out to you, the listener, for taking a bit of time out of your day to listen to old Spike Pit. Take care, and I'll catch you later.